So as it is the Sunday of Aseres Me'tshuva, we're going to talk about a topic which is specific, very specific to tshuva, to Yom HaKippurim. And for those who daven in this shul, it's actually something that has become part of the Or Torah Yom Kippur experience. They have a thing in this shul where they stand up before Kol Nidrei, and they have little cards. I don't know if they still give them out, or they just have the Gabbai announce it, right? They have those little slits of pieces of paper. And they say that the Gabbai announces that since it's Erev Yom Kippur, it's a time that we ask people for forgiveness. We need to ask Mechila. We'll talk about exactly what that is. That's the theme of our day. And so we have this little nusach, which is said in English, which is the best way to do it, because if you say it in a language that you don't understand, it doesn't have a lot of meaning. And people grant each other mechila on Erev Yom Kippur right before davening, which relates to Tzvila Zaka, which is very important. We're not going to talk about today some of the nitty-gritty halachos of mechila. Does a public general request for mechila, how significant is that? How effective is that? Let's put it this way. It can't hurt. It's definitely a good thing, especially if you take it seriously. And if you mean it, and here's some more packets we'll send down there. Thank you. So I think it's a great minug. It's a great thing for the shul. It's a great thing for the mispalim. I think every shul, we should all do it. But it means we need to think about this idea of mechila and the significance of it. And also, I share with you this week, for those who got the email, this article that got me thinking about it. Part of the reason I started thinking about this, because I was listening to the radio this week, and there was a segment on the radio, on NPR, about forgiveness. Because there was a discussion of the criminal justice system, which I'm not very knowledgeable about. I'm not a criminal justice expert of any kind. But there was a discussion about how certain people, they get stuck in a very bad rut, where they get trapped in a cycle where they did something wrong, they acknowledge they did it wrong, they're trying to mend their lives, but to be able to move on, they need to get that thing expunged from their record, potentially. If it's appropriate, that it should be expunged, but it's difficult to get cases closed if you have outstanding fines. And a lot of these criminals with various offenses, They're indigent, so they can't afford to pay their fine, so they can't ever get a job, so they can't ever get their case expunged, it becomes a very big problem. And there was a whole discussion about whether or not judges have the requisite discretion to deal with these kind of things. It was mostly focused about Chicago and Illinois, and they talked a little bit about Cook County specifically, but it was more about Illinois in general and how the criminal justice system works as it relates to fines and the question of forgiveness of fines. You know, do judges have the discretion to forgive certain fines that are mandated by the statute if they see that it's going to help this person get their life back together because of the circumstances that they're in? That was the discussion on the radio. And then when I started looking around, I came across, I don't remember how exactly it ended up on my desk, this article that I shared with you from the New York Times, which if you haven't had a chance to read it, I probably should have put this in the email. Be careful, because it's very gut-wrenching. It's not the Pashto article, and it's about a person who's looking for forgiveness, or it's more actually about the family struggling with the forgiveness with a young man who point-blank murdered his girlfriend, shot his girlfriend in the head, Rahman al-Islam. And it's about the role of forgiveness in the process of sentencing. You know, how they worked, the family, how they worked through this process. The victim's family, of course, and also the perpetrator's family and the local DA in Florida. It's a gut-wrenching article. But it's a very thought-provoking article. I think it is. I think it gives us a lot to think about in terms of what does it mean when a person says they feel bad and they have remorse and they want forgiveness? And what does it mean to give forgiveness? You know, many people, when we think about this topic of forgiveness, they're thinking of the sunflower in the back of their mind, about Wiesenthal's book about forgiveness of the Nazi at the end of the war. You know, these kind of things, they're important topics to think about. And actually, if you look, there is a scholar, I forget his name, I didn't write it, I should have written it down. who's done quite a bit of research. Now there's a lot of forgiveness research about how forgiveness relates to the person who's giving the forgiveness, not just the person who's being forgiven. So we know that forgiveness and mechila is a big piece of what we're supposed to be thinking about now. And so how do we define forgiveness? What does it mean? What is its function? Why do we have forgiveness? What's its purpose? And then how does it fit into the overarching experience of Yom Kippur? That's what I want to focus on together for a few minutes. And I'll give a thank you shout out to my teacher, Rabbi Dr. Jacob J. Schachter, who's coming in November, going to do a community lecture. Rabbi Schachter, years ago, before we moved to Chicago, once gave a talk about forgiveness, and some of the ideas kind of started percolating then. I had it on the shelf, so I pulled out. He had some very interesting things to say. Some of it, most of it is not pertinent to today, because a lot of it has to do with something we'll mention in an aside, having to do with the sunflower and stuff like that. But I want to begin with a fascinating and very fundamental piece in source number one, a piece from Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik. Rav Soloveitchik was an expert in many areas, and one of the important works, one of the important aspects of Yahadus that he focused on was tshuva. He used to give talks about tshuva, so there was a student of his, there was a guy who used to come to the lectures, his name was Pinchas Peli, who redacted some of these lectures. It's not Rav Soloveitchik in the original, so it's not exactly the way he would have said it, but the concepts are concepts of the Rav. And Rav Soloveitchik here makes a statement that we should understand. What does it mean when we talk about, which is today's topic, mechila? What does that mean? So he says here in Al HaTshuva, mechila eina musag hanogea lechit ul Yom Kippur bilvad. Mechila is not a Yom Kippur, an exclusive Yom Kippur topic. It's not exclusive to tshuva. What is it? It is a general topic. And the next line points out that is pertinent to dinei mamonos, to a financial transaction, to choshen mishpat. What does he mean? Third line. Kesha adam chayov chov lachavero. When a person is indebted, is obligated to their friend. Vahala, and the other person, mochalo eskolachovo eskolko. Or he has forgiven part of the debt, or the whole debt. Hare machalo es hashibud. He has forgiven the shibud, is the indebtedness. Meshubit is a halachic term. It's also a Yiddish phrase, right? People would say, I'm meshubit to somebody. It's a Yiddishism. That comes from a Hebrew Talmudic phrase that says that I am indebted to you. If I borrow $100 from you, so I am indebted to you. Actually, halachically, there are two elements of that shibud. There's a financial element that we call shibud mamon. My wallet, if I have $100 in it, that $100 has a lien. It's indebted to you. But there's also a shibud haguf. I am personally indebted to you. Even if I don't have money in my wallet, I, as an individual, am indebted to you. There's a shibud. There's a debt. When a person is mochel chov, it means they've forgiven and they've given up, they've severed that chov, that indebtedness. Hare mochel es hashibur es achiyuv, or the obligation, shahaya mutal olav, that was on him, ad la'akshal ha-mechila, until the action of the mechila. And that's what he points out now. He says, af b'mechila sh'yom ha-kippurim kach. So too on Yom Kippur. Kasher adam over avera, Yom HaKippurim ba limchol es ha'onesh. Yom Kippur comes, and what does it strive to do? It doesn't expunge the avera. It doesn't cleanse the soul of the person. It doesn't bridge the gap, the chasm that has been caused between us and Hashem Yisbarach. What does it do? It does one thing. The same way that if I owe you $100 and you say I'm mochel, it means I no longer owe you the $100. So too, I kivyachol, so to speak, I owe the Ribbono Shalom. I am indebted to God. I owe him. I have to pay. I have the punishment that is hanging over. God says, okay, Yom Kippur will enable me to forgo that obligation, that debt. You were indebted, let's say, God forbid, you know, it says in the Vitas, Malchus, person was indebted to Chayv, whatever it was, whatever onesh, whatever is the consequence of your action. So then, that's no longer hanging over my head. And that's, by the way, that word consequence is very important because we try to use this in our house with our children. We like, I don't like to dole out punishments to our kids. We have consequences. You know, if you tell a child, if you do A, you're going to get B. So then when they get B, one second, I don't know if they have anything. Let's pass these back there. When they get B, we try to explain to them that it's not. I'm not giving them B. I'm not giving them a punishment. I'm giving them a consequence. It's the consequence of their actions. They knew before. Now, we know that children don't have das, a katan ein bo das, so the A to B connection is, that's a little bit weak for them, so we have to try to reinforce that regularly, like A, and then if you do A, we really will do B. We really will. We try to tell them many, many times. Then they get B, then they're angry. It's not us. It's you. And the Rebbeinu Shlomi sets us out at the beginning of the year. He tells us, okay, Chevra, all right. Here is A. It's called the Shulchan Aruch. And here is B. All the things that if you don't do that, you're going to be obligated to pay up, whatever that chov is going to be. And then, if we fall short of A, then it's on us. It's our consequence. We have that chov. It's the same way that if Glenn lends me $100, I have to pay him $100. It's a consequence of the fact that's a chov. That's a consequence of the fact that I got the money. So too, when it comes to the Ribono Shel Olam, the purpose of Mechila, Mechilas Avonos, is specifically, says Rav Soloveitchik, related to the Onesh. That's it. But now I can understand, if that's what Mechila is about, why Mechila is so tied in to Averos that are Bein Adam L'Chavero. That's number one, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But also I can understand why there have to be two parties in the Mechila process, and it affects two people. Because if what it's doing is, it's letting go of an obligation, a contractual connection between two people, well, you have the person who's doing the letting go, and then the person who is being let go. I don't know if there's such a conjugation like that. But that's what Mechila is about. So take a look in the Mishnah, in the second source, a concept that's well known to us. Averos, Mishnah Yuma, Averos Shebein Odom Lachavero, mistakes, errors that take place between people. Ein Yom HaKippur Mechaber Ad Shiratze Es Chavero. What does that mean? Notice how the Mishnah is a very, very interesting formulation. I don't know if we ever paid attention to this. It doesn't say Yom HaKippur is not Mechaber until I, the transgressor, get Mechila from you. It says, I have to appease you. I have to make you feel better. You hear the difference? It's not just about me as the recipient of the Mechila. I can't just sit at home and say, you know what? I really hope that that person is going to be mochel me. It's good that that person is mochel me. But really what I have to do is I have to go and reach out to that person. I have to be meratzeh es chavero. That's the concept that appears in Bava Kamma, that if, God forbid, I damage somebody, let's say I break your arm, so I have to, obviously, I have to pay you all the things, I have to pay Tsar, Nezek, Ripa, Shevis, Voshes, all the things, but it's not. I'm not going to get, you know, spiritually taken care of until I come and I mephias you, until I appease you. So why is that? So I think it's because it's both components. It's the person who's giving the mechila, and it's the person who's receiving the mechila. So the person who's receiving the mechila also has the obligation to seek out the mechila. Achi yiratzes chaver. I think that lashon is very meduyak. It's very specific. Don't just wait and pray that the person will be mochel you, which we're going to do in Tefillah Zaka, but you also need to go out and ask the person. And that's what the Rambam writes. The Rambam paskins this in source number 3 in Halacha Test. Ein had shuvah v'lo yom kippur mechaperim. Shuvah and yom kippur are not mechaper. Ela avera shebein adam lamakom. We're going to come back at the end to the concept of what kapara is, because right now we're only talking about mechila. Mechila is clearly distinct from kapara or slicha. And the Rambam says, Avol, second to last line in the top section in 3, Avol Averos in the underline, Shebein Olam Chaver, that are between people, Kagon, for example, Chovel B'Chavero, hitting someone, wounding them, O Hamakalalas Chaver, or cursing a friend, O Gozel, or thievery, V'chayotzbem, just like them, Eino Nimchal Lo La'olam, they are not Nimchal, you don't get Mechila, you have to pay the person and you have to approach them. And now the Rambam reiterates, in case you didn't get it, let me clarify it for you. And now the Rambam says, now I'm in the last of part 1 and 3, and then we're going to move to the next page. I just clipped it for you in two pieces. Even though I gave you the money, it's not enough. Shuchayavlo, second section in number 3. Tzorech l'vratzoso, you have to, rotze, you have to make the person feel better. And, v'lisho mimenu shiyimcholo. And, afilo hiknes chaviru elobidvarm, even if you only tick the person off, if you not only got them angry, you irritated them, you also have to. Tzorech l'faiso, v'livgo bo ad shiyimchol. And then the Rambam says, he doesn't want to, let's say the other person doesn't want to be mochel, so you bring three people, etc., etc. So the Rambam is formulating in the way that it's not so much about me getting mechila from the person as much as I have to seek mechila. I got to go after that person. As the recipient, I have to make the move. What happens if we don't go after that person, and we don't get the mechila? So what did the Rambam say? It's not nimchal. What does it mean, it's not nimchal? Well, if we said that mechila has to do with a debt which needs to be paid, so then that debt will still be hanging. What I'm about to share with you, if I hadn't seen it, if it wouldn't be printed, I don't think I would have the audacity to say it. But if you look very carefully, in Sefer Bereishis, there is a story that is a very, very troubling story, whose end is very unclear. On this Yom Kippur, we're going to say an askara, a memorial prayer for the 10 martyrs, right? For the Asara Haruge Malchus, who were killed over the period of several dozen years in the time of the Second Beis HaMikdash and after the destruction of the Second Beis HaMikdash, including Rabbi Akiva and other famous martyrs. Why do we have 10 martyrs? So there are 4 different midrashic strains that all tell the same story that has something to do with
the 10 tribes,
the 10 brothers,
Yosef.
So I ask you a question. What does that mean? Now, obviously, there's a historical question here. Did this story actually ever take place? And the point, according to our tradition, is it doesn't really matter. The point of the Midrash is to teach you something. It's not meant to tell you a historical record. But I don't understand. Didn't Yosef and the brothers, didn't they work it out? Did they or didn't they? So the brothers definitely had a lot of remorse. They definitely accepted the fact that they were guilty. And if we had like a whole few hours, we would actually go through all the psukim, because in Parshas Mikes, they go down, and Yosef doesn't tell them who he is, so he's listening to them, and they say to each other, Aval Ashemim Anachnu Al Achinu. Ashemim, that comes from the word Ashamnu. We did it. We are guilty. So they said Ashamnu. Ashemim Anachnu Al Achinu. We did it. Asher Ra'in Ritzaras Nafsho Bishanu Elenu Velo Shamanu. We did not listen to him, and we were wrong. But then when Yosef tells them, Ani Yosef Aor Avichai, they don't say anything. Now, they don't say anything probably because they're Kinivalu Miponov. But then they spend the rest of their life living with Yosef in Egypt, and the Torah never tells us if or how they ever spoke of what happened.
What about when Yosef says to them, you know, God, if it's for this purpose that I was brought down, and you know, so...
What does Yosef say to them there? He says, don't worry. Ki lemichya shelachani elokim lefneichem. Does Yosef ever say, I'm mochel you? He never does.
And when
Yaakov dies, they get nervous, and then they send a message. Ko somrul Yosef, ana sana pesha abdecha, etc., etc. That's what you see in source number 4. Ko somrul Yosef, ana sana pesha achecha v'chatasim ki ra'og malucha, v'ata sana l'fesha abde elokei avicha, v'yef ki Yosef v'davra me'lov. Yosef cries. Says the Rabbeinu Bachaya, something mamish hair-raising and unbelievable. Says in the underline here, V'lo be'er hakasiv shemachal lahem. It never actually says in the verse that he forgave them. Ukvar biru razal shekol mi shechata lachaveiro, and the rabbis taught us that if somebody harmed someone else, v'asa tshuva einu nimcha la'olam ad shiratzeh chaveiro. And this goes back to what Jeff said a second ago, even though Afa Pishiskar Kosafayinachim, Vayinachim Osam, he comforted them, but it doesn't say that he was mochel them. Lo Ra'inu Shiyazkir in the double underline Hakosav Mechila B'Yosef. And when did that happen? Va'alkain, where the little arrow is, Hutzrach La'onish Lios Komus V'Chosim Lihipokid Acharzman B'inyan Asara Haruge Malchus. You know why the story of the 10 martyrs is still being told? It's because Yosef never did forgive the brothers. And maybe, Rabbi Foreman, I think, once spoke about this in one context, and maybe the reason he never forgave them was because they never apologized to him. Look, in this verse, they actually didn't say to him, we're sorry we did this to you. They told an emissary, a messenger, a group of people, when Yaakov is dead, go tell Yosef what we did was wrong. Why is Yosef crying? So maybe he's crying because it's conjuring up all those bad images, all those years as a slave. Maybe he's crying because he's so broken that his brothers don't come to his face and tell him once and for all, we are sorry. Please be mochalos. So Yosef says, look, if you don't ask for mechila, I can't give you mechila. Why not? Probably because of the diuk of the Rambam, that the mechila needs two parties. You, it's on you guys. Of course I can be mochel you in theory, but it's on you guys to own it. You have to ask for the mechila. And if you don't ask for the mechila, okay, God can forgive you for the aspect that's bein adam lamakom, between you and him. Of course he can forgive it. But if it's an issue between us, it's a chov. I don't know what to tell you.
But do we have a concept that somebody else could then suffer the consequences?
Oh, great. So this is a separate problem, which has to do with how we understand vicarious punishment, the whole concept that the Asar Haruge Malchus should suffer because of the sins of the 10 martyrs. Obviously, that's not it. It's not the purpose of that linkage is to teach us a lesson. It's not to be understood on the simple level. We have a principle. Poked avon avos abanim. But then we say ish b'cheto yumasa, which is only if it's ochzim amaisa avosim biyadim. Only if they continue the wicked ways of the fathers do they get punished vicariously. So, obviously, that's trying to tell you something else. But you're right. As a matter of principle, no. Today, we can't get punished for Mechiras Yosef in the normal, in the way that we generally understand culpability. But the idea is, I think, that you need both parties. And Mechila is something that exists like on a monetary issue. I owe you money, I have to ask you, and you have to forgive it. If I don't ask you, of course you can forgive it, but that's lacking in the process of Mechila. And now we can understand why the whole sunflower discussion is really moot from a Jewish perspective, which is what the traditional Jewish response in that book and others was also.
Could you just say something about the sunflower concept for those who have...
Yes, I'll reference what that means. So there was a book that was written by Wiesenthal years ago. I don't remember, it must have been in the 60s, or maybe even earlier, called The Sunflower, where he describes being in a hospital, and a Nazi came over to him to unburden himself and asked forgiveness for the crimes that he committed as a member of the SS. And Wiesenthal just shooed away the fly that was buzzing around. It didn't acknowledge. He didn't forgive him. He did not forgive him. He just ignored him. And this, he sent this question to, what's that?
Elie Wiesel.
It happened to Wiesel.
Simon Wiesenthal.
Wiesenthal wrote Simon the book, Wiesenthal. And I think it happened to Wiesenthal. It was Wiesenthal.
Not Elie Wiesel.
Yeah, it definitely was Wiesenthal who wrote the book, and I think it happened to him too. So, anyway, the point is, he then sent this episode, this incident, around to like the big theologians and thinkers, Jewish, non-Jewish, Catholic, Kitzer Meister, the whole story. And they wrote back, so he published it in a book called The Sunflower. And then Rabbi Schachter, when he gave this talk, there was a lot of discussion of, there was a sefer called Chukas Hager that discussed a German who had previously served in the SS and committed whatever unspeakable horrors, who wanted to later convert. So that's a whole story in and of itself. So a big piece of that question is, well, what about Mechila? So based on what we're saying now, it's fairly obvious. It's the same thing as it comes to the New York Times article, Nebuch, this family whose daughter was murdered. You can grant somebody Mechila when they, A, come to you and ask you for Mechila. You can grant them Mechila either way, but ideally they come to ask you Mechila. But you can only grant Mechila for the component of the obligation of the chov, the debt, that's vis-a-vis you. You can't grant mechila for a debt that's pertinent to somebody else. It's not possible. It's a question between me and you. So, yes, the parents of the murder victim can be mochel the grief and the total destruction that's taking place to them. But they can't be mochel the chov of their daughter who was murdered. The child of a survivor can be mochel a perpetrator of the grief and the suffering of what it means to be the child of a survivor. And a survivor can be mochel, if they want, to anybody who comes to me, if their particular capo or guard came to them, they can be mochel that particular person. But nobody can be mochel on behalf of 6 million. Of anyone else, because it's not your chov. Because the chov is a debt in between two individuals. And kol od that person never comes to ask to be mochel, and that mechila is never granted, the chov is still going to be out there. And it's also true in the opposite direction, which is, take a look on the next page, this is a very interesting tshuva. This is a tshuva of the Chavisio, Rav Yorah Bachrach in the 14th century in Germany. Shaul Ger Tzedek Echad, one convert asked, Mikila Kadosha Amsterdam, in Mechuyav Lahachzir Gneva Shigonav Mi Yisrael Bigiyuso. A goy, a Gentile, stole something from somebody who was Jewish, and then he converted. We have an idea that Gershon is Geyer, a convert, Kekotan Shinolad Dami. It's like, this is the original idea of born again. He's like a new person. So he says, look, when I stole, my name was John Doe, and now my name is Yosela. So do I have to return the theft from when I was not Jewish? Because now I'm a different person. And you can't get a greater spiritual transformation than Kekotan Shinolad Dami. Like, you're totally a new entity. So what's the answer? Maybe you're a new entity from a spiritual perspective, but there's a chov. There's an obligation. Says the Chavis Yoyer, even though we say in the top underline, Gershon is Gair Kakotin Chinola Dami, Umashma Mizet, sounds from this, the Kol Avera Sha'asa Kvar, all the bad things that he did, all the Averos, Lo Yizachu Od, Vahavi Mamish Kakotin Chinola Dami. But he quotes a Tosfos in Sanhedrin who says that if somebody murdered when they were not Jewish and then they converted, they're still put to death. Why? He says, look at the bottom line. He says, look, let me explain this to you. V'yesh laham tika inyan betuv tam. Let me explain this to you sweetly. Ki ha'inyan sheger shenizgar kakotan shenola dami. When a person converts, they become a new entity. That's mipnei shakabolas ol Torah mitzvos machaper al kol tovos Hashem asher asa. That's because by converting, they atone for all of the things that they did
to God,
to Hashem. Kumo tshuva ma'al yasa, like proper tshuva. Kilu asa oso ma'isa biyahaduso, as if he had done that when he was Jewish. Va'asa tshuva. Lachain lo yoel lo geiruso bedaver shachayev alamisas bezdin kumo shiyoel gam kein biyisrael al yidei tshuva. Because tshuva only works on the other half, on the rehabilitation of the spiritual makeup of the person, but not mechila. Mechila is something else. Mechila is vis-a-vis the debt that is owed, the punishment. And that has nothing to do. We haven't spoken one word until now, really, about tshuva. Because what the Chavos Ya'ar is saying is we need to isolate the difference between mechila and tshuva. Tshuva affects the person on their spiritual makeup. I'll get to you in a second, Steve. And then mechila is dealing with the collateral damage of what you did wrong. So yes, you might be a kakatan shenola dummy. You might come to Beis Din and do tshuva. But even a Jewish person, let's say, God forbid, a Jewish person violates an avera that has malchus. When a person gets malchus, when they are being whipped, beaten by the Beis Din, by the Shliach Beis Din with a whip, they say, v'hu rachim yichaper avon. And the person says, vidui, they do tshuva. But they still suffer the consequence. Because that consequence is irrespective of tshuva. That's a function of mechila. And the Beis Din doesn't have the right to be mochel on behalf of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says there's tshuva and then there's mechila. So yes, Yom Kippurim is mochel for certain things. And the Gemara has a whole discussion about that. But for our purposes, we can understand how these are different. Yes, Steve.
So what can one do about the sin that someone does to someone who has died?
Very good. So you know what the Rambam says? The Rambam says that a person... We'll go back. I think I have it in this Rambam. Go back to the previous page. Halacha Yud Aleph. Hachote lachavero umeis chavero. I'm in source 3:11. Hachote lachavero umeis chavero kodem shiyavakish memenu mechila. What happens? Rachmona litzlan, the person dies. Mevi asar b'nei adam uma'amidon al kivro. Bring 10 people to the person's grave. V'omar b'fneim, and he says in front of the minion, Chatasi l'Hashem Elokei Yisrael u'leploni zesha asisi lo kach v'kach. V'im haya chayav lo mamon, if he had to pay money, yach zero liyorshav. Give it to his descendants. And if you don't know who his descendants are, give it to the Beis Din and you'd be misfired. You have to go to the person's grave. Says the Halakha Chafetz Chaim, now we understand why Lashon Hara is terrible. Oh, you understand why it's terrible for many reasons. But from a Yom Kippur standpoint, the Chafetz Chaim used to give a mashal. Imagine someone stood on the top of Or Torah and took a pillow, a feather pillow, cut a hole in it, and shook it out on Dempster. So Chafetz Chaim says, I might be able to go and ask mechila from that person, but I won't be able to rectify all the collateral damage. And it's even worse. It's even worse. Now this is a big problem. The Chafetz Chaim wrote the Chafetz Chaim, right? Rabbi Yisrael Meir HaKohen of Radin wrote this work about teaching us how to use our speech properly. He sent it to Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter was the great Musar giant, the great ethicist. And Rabbi Yisrael Salanter would not give an approbation to the book. Imagine refusing to give a haskama for the Chafetz Chaim to the most pious work ever. He says, I'll tell you why I won't give a haskama. Because one thing that the Chafetz Chaim wrote there, Chafetz Chaim writes, and this is exactly what we're talking about today, that if God forbid I speak Lashon Hara about somebody, I have to go ask them mechila. If I don't ask them mechila, how am I going to get that debt removed from that Bein Adam L'Chaveiro person? So Chafetz Chaim says, you speak Lashon Hara about somebody, you have to go address it with them. So imagine, here I am, sitting one night in my house. All the kids are sleeping. Nechama's sleeping. I'm sitting at my dining table with a cup of tea and my Gemara. Life's good. I have honey in my tea. It's not too hot. It's not too cold. Everything is great. Then I get a phone call. Everything is good right now. No one's crying. Everybody's happy. Thank God we have an amazing, blessed life. Baruch Hashem, everything is good. Here I have my big mug of tea. It's really kishmak. Having a good night. And then I get a call from my friend, Bob. Bob says, Reuven, you know, we've been friends for a long time. And Yom Kippur is coming. So I figured it's time to reconnect, because I have to ask you mechila. You know, I have to tell you that last week, I actually stood outside of Jewel, and I told every single person who came out of the supermarket that you're really a jerk. And they shouldn't have anything to do with you. And I posted on blogs all kinds of nasty things about you. I took it down now. But I wanted to ask you mechila. Because I did see probably about 200-300 people that day in Jewel. Most of them will come to your shir. And then I hang up the phone. So here I am. I have my Gemara and my tea. How do I feel right about now?
Sad. He's cold.
Yeah. It's not a good night anymore. So Rishol Salanta says, wait a second. What Bob just did was horrible. Because not only did he say Lashon Hara about me, now he made me feel even worse by asking Mechila. So he hurt my feelings. He violated, maybe you call Onoas Devarim. So says Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, I won't give a haskama to the book Chavetz Chaim because you say you have to ask Mechila and I say you can't ask Mechila from someone like that. Because by asking for Mechila, you hurt them even more. Let them live. What are you going to do now? So now many Acharonim say, now you're stuck. Because you can't even ask for Mechila. You can't ask for Mechila because if you do, it's a catch-22. So the best thing, what do they say? An ounce of prevention is a pound of a cure, right? So the answer is, don't say Lashon Hara in the first place. But this is a big problem. Now that we understand Mechila, we can understand why Mechila for Lashon Hara is such a problem. So then the different Achronim gives different suggestions. You know, you say to somebody, and then there's a pilpul, does this work? I call somebody and say, you know, I want you to be mochel me for anything that I said or anything that I did. Okay, some say it sounds good, others say, no, you have to be mefar d'chei. What do you mean you said? So what exactly did you say about me? You know, then you have to get that. That's.
They'll remember.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I don't know.
Try to get those feathers back.
But really, no one's mentioned anything about the sincerity level. That's why we go back to Yosef. He could have said, thought in his mind, they're coming to me now. Yeah, they are sorry, but I could kill them. I'm, you know, Rosh Hashanah, and they know that. So.
I agree with you. So, which is true, and by the way, that's one of the things that people talk about. What George's point is, where's the sincerity factor when you ask for mechila ad shiratzes chavero? You know, somebody comes to your Erev Yom Kippur, you know, 5 seconds before Kol Nidre. Oh, will you mochel me? You know, like I torched your Buick in the driveway last week. I hope you mochel me. The check is in the garage. So, like, you know, how sincere are you? Are you just afraid that the Malach HaMavis is running behind you, standing there at the door of Kol Nidre? I think in the case of Yosef, actually, it's the opposite. Yosef knew they were so sincere from the vidu that they said before in Parshas Miketz. When he did not reveal himself, that's when they were most honest. That's when they really showed their true colors. And that's why I think that's why it's so powerful. Rabbeinu Bachai says that he knew they were remorseful and he still wasn't mochel them because they still didn't ad shiratzes chaver. They didn't come to him directly. They didn't own up to him. Yeah.
What about people who one could only presume to be mentally ill but seem to live, you know, an okay life? They can put one foot in front of the other and do whatever they have to do, yet say things that are so unbelievably outrageous, like to oneself or to others that you have witnessed, and they have no clue, or they have never asked for forgiveness.
So I think that question has a couple of parts to it.
Yes, sorry.
And none of it having to do with any political situation that's going on today.
We're not discussing
we need a daven for Ziad Yishmael. God help us.
Yeah.
What do you think? I think there are two parts. One is a deep mystery that I wonder about. Many people have wondered about. People, what is the Rabbeinu Shalom, what does he want from mental illness? I wonder that sometimes. You know, I've known people who, Rachman and Litzlan, they didn't have the capacity to lead a normal life. And no person, Rachman and Litzlan, who took their own life. And they took their own life because they were mentally ill. They did not have the tools to lead a normal life. And you ask the Rabbeinu Shalom, a person who has a physical ailment, so then, you know, they as beings, as neshamas, as emotionally put together people, can struggle with that barrier, that thing that's bothering them. But if a person doesn't have the faculties to handle life, I don't know. To me, that's one of the great mysteries of life, that the Rabbeinu Shalom puts people in the world who don't have sometimes the ability, at least what it seems, they don't have the ability. So then it goes to the second point, was, okay, so what does that mean in terms of their own actions? So we have a principle in halacha that onus rachmana patre. If somebody is coerced, so then they're not culpable for their actions. And only the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, who is bochin kloyos v'lev, only the Rabbeinu Shel Olam knows what that means. You know, nobody can judge anybody else in terms of what their true motivations are, in terms of what their negiyas are, in terms of what they're capable of doing and what they're not capable of doing. Some people, you know, David HaMelech, when he was on the lam, so he presented himself to Achish Melech Gas, and he presented himself as an insane person. Insane. And, you know, who's to tell whether he is or isn't insane? Turns out he wasn't. It was just a joke. But it's hard to know. So this goes back to a different issue, which has to do more with, you know, Mavra al-Midosav, which is a very tall task. The Gemara has an idea about, you know, trying to, how we relate to other people, trying to be as, there's a Yiddish expression, to fargin someone. That means to let it go. So those are hard things to do. They're complicated things to do, especially when it comes to names, you know, the sticks and stones versus the names. You know, somebody who hurts you in your name, in your neshama, it's a lot harder. That's why words are so hurtful. So I don't have a good answer for you, except to put those two things out there. That one is, there's the mystery of the mental illness, and then there's the other aspect, which is onus rachmana patre. If a person, if they don't have the ability to manage, so then they're not chayav. And a person can be a shota ledavar echad. A person could be totally, you know, rational and normal in one area of life, and can be completely irrational in another area of life. And only the Rabbeinu Shel Olam knows how, the Rambam points out in Hilchos Teshuvah, only the Rabbeinu Shel Olam knows how to weigh and measure that cheshbon. Okay, so let's try to finish up with the opposite perspective now. Because until now, we understood that there's a difference between mechila and the other aspects of rehabilitation of the person, that you need to have the person ask for mechila, the person has to be granting mechila. That's all in terms of accomplishing the mechila for the recipient. What about for the giver of the mechila? So the Rambam, in that same section, the Rambam writes that if somebody comes and asks you for mechila in Halacha Yud, I'm in source number 3, Halacha Yud, Asur la'adam sheyeh achzari v'lo yispayes. It is forbidden. Source number 3, in the underline in Halacha Yud, it's forbidden for a person to be achzari. What does achzari mean?
Cruel.
Right, cruel, callous, and not to forgive someone. And not only that, the Rambam says, when the person asks you for mechila, mochel b'leiv av shalem uvenefesh chafetza. The Rambam says you should be mochel them in nefesh chafetza. Now again, the Rambam says that's when the person comes to you. The Gemara even has a story, a powerful story, that Rav, someone slighted Rav, a local butcher, did something to insult Rav, the great Amora, and Rav went to his store on Erev Yom Kippur. Why did Rav go to the store on Erev Yom Kippur? Exactly. So the guy would... Now, at the end of the story, he didn't, but Rav was trying to give him a chance. You see how integral it is about the asking mechila. But now the Rambam is telling you something else. It's not just about the recipient. It's also about the giver. A person should be mochel. And then he goes on. Even va'afilo heitz lo harba, even if he abused you greatly, v'chata lo harba lo yikom v'lo yitor, don't take revenge and don't hold a grudge. V'zeu darkam shel zera Yisrael v'libam anachon. And that's the Jewish way. That's what the Rambam writes. That word achzari in the Rambam, I think, is important. I think it's significant. And this is what, if you go online, you see some of the forgiveness, the whole center of forgiveness research. What they're finding is that forgiveness also helps the victim. That the victim is able to help rehabilitate themselves from that crime by giving the mechila. Now, the Rambam does not say, oh, you know, every victim should just be mochel the perpetrator just because. No, the Rambam does say that the person has to come to you. And that's, if you look in that story in the New York Times, part of the process of mechila was the fact that the murderer did have the remorse and did come and say that they were sorry. And that was part of what the victims were dealing with. They were trying to put that into the context. But what it does is that by giving the mechila, I think this is my suggestion, this is the diuk, by forgiving the other person, it affects you as a person. It makes you a more sensitive person. It makes you a person who is less achzari, more easygoing. You're able to move on. It helps you. And we're not saying in every circumstance, in every case, you know, somebody owes you $5,000, they come to you and say, you know, I hope you'll be mochel me my $5,000. You know, I don't hold anything against you, but I'm certainly expecting you to pay me the $5,000. But there is an element here of, if a person doesn't give mechila, they are achzari. There's an element of callousness. Yes. So that's part of what they're discussing in that literature, is that you don't become a victim anymore, and it also affects the perpetrator in their, that they no longer are, they're no longer the outcast and the...
the perpetrator doesn't even know. Like, there are situations where people might owe you an apology, but they're not going to. So you're stuck in this place of, you know, they're never going to, or, you know, they don't recognize it,
So I could see how there is, and that's part of the research. But it's a good question how to deal with those cases. You know, there may be ways to address it without being mochel that person and just say, you know what, I'm focusing on who I am and what my circle of influence is, and I'm just going to let it go. It doesn't mean I have to be mochel them. It doesn't mean I'm not mochel them. It just means, like, I'm just moving on. But, you know, that's a personal... That's the interesting thing. You don't see from the Rambam that there's a chiyuv to be mochel somebody who doesn't ask for mechila. There may be, and I'm not aware of it, I'm not an expert in all aspects, but when you look in this Rambam, you see that both are essential. So now let's go to the Shulchan Aruch on Source 6, where we conclude with the opposite limitation in a certain sense. There are some times where you don't have to grant mechila. If you look in the Ramah, in the last line here, V'hamochel, I'm on page 6, this is the Shulchan Aruch with the Ramah and the Rashi script on the top and the Mishnah Berurah edited by the Chofetz Chaim on the bottom. So I'm on page, source 6. Last of the top section, V'hamochel, just for time, we're going to just go to the end of the line on the top section. V'hamochel, and the person who's giving forgiveness, Lo yiyeh achzari milimchol. Should not be cruel. Im lo, except shemechavein letoas hamavakesh mechila. Unless I'm trying to help the person who is asking for mechila. That person comes to me and says, I'm sorry. And the Gemara illustrates a case where, you know, I know that maybe that person was remorseful, or I know that we need to really repair this more. So maybe the first time I could say to them, you know what, I'm not mochel you. If I'm doing it for the purpose of helping them deal with whatever they need, or the Mishnah Berurah points out, and this is what it sounds like from Rashi, or look in the bottom, way at the bottom, where the yud is, mechila v'hu adin u'mechavein letovas atzmo, shemisyare sheyagia lo hezek sheyimchol. There's also an element that you don't have to be mochel somebody if that mechila is going to hurt you further. And that's something to think about. What does that mean? Now, if you look on the left side, the Aruch HaShulchan points out that this is a slippery and dangerous type of thing where I put the arrow. Achim mechavein letovas shalom avakish mechila b'mesh eino mochelo rashai k'demotzino ma'is. The Gemara says in the end of Yuma, ach be'emes lo shechiach davar zeh. It's not so common. But there is a limit to forgiveness. If that granting of forgiveness to that person by you is not in their benefit, which is rare, or it's going to hurt you more. Now, how do you figure that out? It's an important calculus. Not so clear. It's worth sitting and thinking very carefully about. But it's not that mechila is a blank check, that just because somebody comes and asks you mechila, you have to give it to them. It's two sides. There's the person who's asking for the mechila, and there's the person who's giving the mechila. And so it's complicated. And we all have situations where these like tightly spun webs of people and actions and histories and implications and future, and all these are important. But to conclude, there's no one simple formula. Generally speaking, the Rambam says that we should strive, as he said, even if the person hurt us a lot, to accept their mechila. But there's something that is overwhelmingly powerful beyond mechila, and this is the last word on the last page. The Talmud Yerushalmi says, "Shalu lechachma." Now underline, "Chote mau onsho." They asked the wisdom, "What's the punishment of a person who does an avera?" So they answered, "Pay the price." Shalu nevua mau onsho. Hanefesh chotas he tomos. Shalu lekutshabichu chotu chato chote ma onsho. Amr lehem yasa tshuva v'yiskaperlo. Kapara means, and for those who'll be at the women's talk tonight and the men's talk tomorrow night, we're going to talk a little bit more about this, about kapara, and specifically when it comes to slichas, you'll see in a second. There is the rehabilitation of the person on a deep spiritual level. Because mechila that we've been talking about, that has to do with just the debt that is owed between the person. But what about the relationship? What about that mending of those fissures that have those cracks that have been formed? What about the distance? You know, I could say I forgive you, but it's a whole other story to rekindle that connection that we used to have. Al pi derech hateva, that's not necessarily possible. They asked Chachma, the Chachma said, pay the price. But the Ribbono Shel Olam gave us a gift that is unique to God. And maybe because each of one of us has a spark of godliness, we can tap into this on a little bit of a level. The Malbim, in source number 9, has an encyclopedia called HaKarmel. And he says, you look in the Torah, you'll find something amazing. When you find the word Salach, which is this, it's in the Samach section, Slicha, there's only one person who's ever, one entity that's ever associated with Slicha, and that is Hashem. Only God is Soleach. We are Mochel, but He is Soleach. Why? I gave you the whole entry. Look at the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 lines up from the bottom. First word on the line is Me'olam Kalal. Va'al kein lo nimtza slicha b'shumakom b'tanach. You will never find the word slicha in Tanakh. Rak Eitzel Hashem. only with God. Lo me adam la adam, not between people. Kamo ki imcha haslicha. Why? Haslicha lo timatzi raketz lashem ki ha adam la adam hagam she over al pesha. We forgive and no se avon lo yuchal sloach she ein adam yachol al ze lo hashiv davar shahaya ki ilo lo haya. Rak hakadosh baruch hu yuchal aso zos levado. To be soleach means to expunge the act so completely as if it never happened. So as much as we can forgive people, it's impossible for us to actually forget that such a thing took place. But what HaKadosh Baruch Hu does, and what's going to happen to us in Yom Kippur, is so amazing that through the process of tshuva, which includes mechila, but is really much bigger, is that it actually makes it as if that thing never happened. I was Mechal Shabbos, Rachman Litzlan, and when I do tshuva for that, it's not like every time I look at the Rabbeinu Shlomo on Shabbos morning, he's looking at me going, you know, which happens sometimes when we had a little something with somebody, even if we ask them mechila, when we pass them in the street, there's always that little like, you know what I'm saying? Is that look. That never happens with Rabbeinu Shlomo. He doesn't give us the weird look. The power of tshuva and the power of slicha that we're tapping into in this time is so unbelievable, it defies logic. That's why tshuva kadma la'olam, because it's not really a natural, normal process. A consequence is the process of what you did. If that's what the process is, you get a consequence for what you did. Tshuva actually undoes the whole entity, the whole maisa in the first place. It's as if it never took place. And so we need to think about both concepts. You know, we focused on mechila because bein adam lachavero, mechila is really, it's important, it's complex, and it's also fraught with difficulty. The asking, the forgiving, the cheshbening, but it's got to be part of a much bigger context of rehabilitating ourselves, which comes about through slicha. And that's bein adam lamakom. Because when HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us slicha on Yom Kippur, when we say we're sorry, when we say vidui, so he's mochel us. Hashem gives us mechila, right? Because of course there's the mechila bein adam lamakom also, but it's so much bigger. That's why in the bracha in the Shemoneh Esrei you say melech mochel v'soleach, because if he just would have given us mechila, then tomorrow after Yom Kippur when we see him at Shacharis, we'd have that weird look thing going on. But comes Motzei Yom Kippur, because he's soleach, then the weird look is gone, because it's as if it never happened when we do true tshuva. So we have to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu for mechila, and when we do that as part of a bigger tshuva, then it's as if it never happened. Yes, Doc.
It seems to me that we are supposed to do something that's abnormal and unappealing. If there's a victim and there's a perpetrator, the victim is obligated, you're saying, to go to the perpetrator and ask for mechila. Under usual circumstances, the victim hates the perpetrator. I would take the case of a woman who's raped by somebody. The perpetrator is the last person in the world she wants to encounter again. But now you're saying she has to.
She has to acknowledge the person and let that person have the opportunity to ask for mechila. And the Rambam says that to the best of her abilities, she should be mochel that person. However, as you pointed out, sometimes there are certain things, you know, like the tovas hamochel or the tovas hanimchal or and others that Achronim talk about, there are certain things that, you know, what does it mean when you say that you're mochel someone? So this is the distinction between mechila and slicha. So maybe that person could say, you know, the victim could say, yes, I'll be mochel you. I'm willing to be mochel on the chov, on the debt that was incurred by that damage. But it's not slicha, because a person can't be soleach. Only the roshon can be soleach. So the victim can't... The mechila doesn't address the overwhelming destruction that was visited upon this victim. The mechila only addresses the debt that is owed. So as much as a perpetrator can come to a victim and say, I'm sorry, the victim can say, I am mochel you for the debt that is outstanding that you owe me. But the mechila doesn't help address the situation that the victim is in. That's exactly, I think, an important distinction to be drawn here. You know, the person can ask for mechila, but that still doesn't address where the victim is at. Maybe the victim needs counseling. So, of course, mechila doesn't help the counseling. Of course, the perpetrator has to pay for the counseling. And even if the counseling, that person may never, the perpetrator may never be able to fully get slicha. They may never be able to make that victim whole. Because mechila only addresses the chov, the obligation. So in a certain sense, yes, the victim needs to be mochel, the perpetrator, but what that doesn't, based on what we're understanding, what I'm understanding and what maybe we come out with today, there is a potential to misunderstand mechila, which is that the person could get a double injury. I perpetrate a wrong against someone, and then I come back to them and I rob them of their dignity by saying, oh, would you be mochel me? And then they have to be mochel me. And now I hurt them twice. But that's not the case. Because number one, the person only is required to be mochel if the other person is absolutely, completely, 100% remorseful. And that's why the case in the New York Times article is so interesting, because you really get the sense that that murderer was mamish sorry, really, really remorseful. And he was, you know, the whole story. So yes, there was that. But also, once we understand that mechila only relates to the chov, to the obligation, it doesn't relate to the whole person, then the person who gives the mechila is still validated to be hurt. You know, what's the impression? The mistaken impression could be that, well, if I'm mochel that person, then it's as if it never happened. That's not true. You don't give slicha, you only give mechila. So you can't pretend as if it never happened. You can't, and I think I'm glad that you raised this point, because this is the other half. You don't make it seem as though, oh, I gave you mechila, and now that person doesn't have to worry about what happens to me. And now they're off the hook. It's as if it's never happened. That's not what mechila means. Mechila means whatever debt was incurred, I forgive the debt. It's as if you owe me $100. You don't owe me $100 anymore. But what about me as a person? What did it do to my life? How do I have to rehabilitate myself? That's not addressed by mechila. And in that, v'chatasi negdi samid, the perpetrator needs to, for the rest of their life, ensure, to the extent that they are capable, that they rectify the damage that was done. But it doesn't, you know, it doesn't address that. And that's part of, it comes back to, you know, now we're getting more back to the sunflower story of forgiving the Nazi. Even a perpetrator who comes to ask mechila from a specific victim, and the victim says, I'm mochel you, it doesn't mean that the perpetrator can walk away and be like, oh, my life is fine now, I don't have to worry about them. No, v'chatazin evdi sami, you have to worry about them for the rest of your life. Correct. That's exactly what the Malbim is saying. There's mechila bein adam l'chaver, but there's not slicha. Slicha means it never happened. That's not true, it did happen.
That's what makes us human beings. And it's harder to be a human being than a malach, right? I mean, they just have a tafkid and they're on. They do.
Right.
We have our fallacies.
And that's why, yeah, you know, it's somewhat of like a downer to end the shiur now, because you realize, like, yeah, you know what? When we hurt people, there's only so much we can do. And we have to be so cautious. We have to be so cautious because mechila only goes so far. That's why some people, bocha, like the stories in the Gemara about people who sat between the mountains, put their head and in their hands and they cried until they died, because they realized, they mamish grasped the enormity of what it means to really live with that your whole life. And that's why that's why the Times article is also interesting. Even when the victim gives mechila, the perpetrator also has to live with it, v'chatasi negdi samin, because they have to live with the reality of what they did to that victim. So it's important to flesh this out so that we understand what mechila is and what it's not. It's not slicha, so that it does not mean that person walks away as if, oh, everything is fine. It's all fine. It's not all fine. We always need to be conscious of what the ripple effects are of what we do. But at the same time, we should come back to where we started. And maybe there's a Midas Chasidus, as somebody mentioned earlier. Maybe the Rambam says there is no obligation to be mochel somebody who doesn't ask for mechila. But the way that Chazal, the traditional view of the story of Yosef, is that he was mochel the brothers. Even though they never asked him for mechila, he was still mochel them. And I would say, in many cases, as much as possible, you know, of course, there are certain cases that are exceptions, as much as we can come to Yom Kippur. We started by saying that in the shul, we're going to get up and mamash be mochel people. We should think as much as we can. Is it possible? Can we find it in our hearts to be mochel others? Not to be soleach, that's not for us, but to be mochel other people as much as we possibly can. It's good for us, it's good for them. That's hopefully something that we can aspire to.
It just seems like the greatest benefit of this whole process is not for the perpetrator.